Could you tell me then your name, your address and date of birth, please?
My name is Gwynedd Lingard, Gwynedd with two D's, and I will be 80 years of age in 4 months' time.
Right. Tell me a little bit about your background then, your parents, your mother and father, what they did, whether you have any siblings, that kind of thing.
I know, right, but my mother died quite young, but had been a very active woman in her time. In her youth, she did a lot of sport, running and not affiliated sport, but local sport. My father's an excellent swimmer, and he was in the RAF in the war, making and repairing aeroplanes. That was his job. I had a very happy childhood. I have a brother who is older than me, to whom I was quite a nuisance as a young child. But as I got older, so we got on a lot better. Is that all?
Yes. Did your mother... what did your father do?
My father was an upholsterer by trade.
Oh, right.
And after the war, he used his gratuity money to set up a furniture business, which grew into quite a large-scale business, which was good for him. But he retired dead on retirement age.
Did your mother work at all?
Yes, my mother worked... She worked as a girl in a factory, making brushes, and then she married, and then didn't work until such time as the war came around, and then she was called in to the munitions factory, where she worked in Curran's, moving shells, the large shells that they fired out of cannons and things. Very heavy work, shift work, which was difficult for her because we as children, with my father being away travelling the country all the time repairing the aeroplanes, it meant that there were even nights when we had no parent at home. And so a young cousin used to come and stay during those times, but she was only 13 herself. But anyway, we got through it. Had a happy childhood. My mother was very jolly, lovable, loving, sporting. She could run like the wind, but she never had any training. So, and my father, of course, was very, very active too. So I think perhaps it came in my genes that I should do something physical in my life.
What about education then? Can you tell me about the primary school or secondary school, that kind of thing?
Right. I started off, I began school when I was 3 and a half at Ninian Park School, because we lived in Grangetown, Cardiff at the time. And I went to Ninian Park School until such time as I went qualified to go to grammar school. I must have done quite well in the exam because I won a squat scholarship, which made it much easier for my mother because there was a grant towards my clothing every year, a big grant, so they kept me in school uniform. It was called a Caradoc Wells Scholarship. I don't know whether it still exists. And then in the grammar school, I was doing rather well, then beginning to miss a lot of studying that I should be doing because I'd got so involved in various sports, in particular gymnastics. And then when my gymnastic career came that, and I was long listed for the Olympic Games, I left school. My mother signed the form. My father hit the roof. And I left school then so that I knew I couldn't do the training I wanted to achieve the goals that I had if I had all the homework to do and I was going to be successful at it. And I was not good at losing and failing, so I'm afraid leaving school was the only answer for me, not for my dad. And so I went into work then in Boots the Chemist, that only took grammar school girls in those days. They were very, very choosy who they took. They only took grammar school girls, and I went there. But then, of course, I was training on Sundays and in week. And then when the training got more acute, as the listing towards the Olympics came, and we started off with, as you'd appreciate, with a very large squad, and it gradually people were dropped out. And so there were trials and things all the time. So they were gradually screening the whole thing. And then it meant that I eventually did then get selected for the Olympics in 1952, which was just wonderful for myself and everyone I knew. With, you know, the pride was there. I lived in Grangetown, very much a working class district, and flags went out, and you know, it was a street collection bought me a gold wristlet watch. You know, there was a lot, and I felt so proud, and that was lovely. But then the Boots the chemist refused me the time to go because it was in August, and the rule with them then was that if you had holidays, you could not take them in the August period. It was a company rule, which they wouldn't bend in my case. And so, although there was a lot of fuss made about it, a friend of my mother, eventual mother-in-law, my boyfriend's mother, had a friend in her church who thought he could get me a job in a factory office. And it was called BSA Tools. They made scientific equipment and microscopes and all sorts of things there. And I worked in the office there, and they allowed me the time off. Not only the time off, but with pay, which was quite something in those days, with pay. Because there wasn't the money in sport that there is now, you know. We had to, every time you went to a trial or anything, it was all your own expense, train fares, new coat to go. My mum, I had to say, I'd see that her daughter was the best dressed. So that's how it went. But yes, if it hadn't been for, well, I think if BSA Tools hadn't offered me the job, I'd have left anyway, to be honest, because it was my dream. And I was, teenagers were very young in those days, and it was my childhood dream to get there. And I did, I got to the games, so that was good.
Tell me, just before we move on, what school did you go to?
Ninian Park School for Infant and Junior. And then I went to it was first of all called Howard Garden School. And it was a school that had been bombed in the war, and so there was only part of it useful. But there had been a new school built for Howard Gardens in Penylan that was to be taken over. But the Americans, when the war came, it was used as an American hospital. And so when I went, they were still in the old building, bomb building. But by the second year then, I went up to the new school in Penylan, and then it was called Lady Margaret Grammar School.
Right.
And then I didn't go on to college, of course, because I left from there.
Yeah, so how old were you when you left?
16.
Right. You were 16. Mm. Okay, so you...
Maybe not quite 16, I might have still been 15, I'm not too sure about that.
So you were quite happy to leave school then, because it meant that you...
Yes, I knew I couldn't do well at schooling. I knew that I was not going to do well in my exams. And the only way for me to do it was to give up some of my training time. And at that time, although I'm sure it would not be considered a sensible thing to do, but it was what I chose to do. And so I left school so that I could concentrate on my training, and did eventually, but at that time it was a little risky because I'd not yet been selected. But I thought my chances might be pretty good, so...
And you say your mother was 100% behind you, was
oh,
she?
Oh, yes. And my father was too. He never missed coming to see me in competition and things like that, as long as you didn't have work on. But, yes, they were very, very supportive parents. My father even built in his furniture factory some equipment for me to train on at home. We had a balancing beam across our lounge that was not far off the floor. And when people came in, they had to step over it to sit down. I don't think many... houses my parents would put up with that these days. And yeah, I had my own asymmetric bar in the garden. They weren't very good. We had to tie them down. But yeah, I had lots of support. I was very, very fortunate.
Yeah, sounds great. So you went into this factory. How did you get the job, did you say?
My mother-in-law-to-be, my boyfriend's mother, was in church with a gentleman who... And they had a youth centre in the church, and they had asked me if I would go to there and teach them, do a little bit of work on a mat with some of the girls that were there. I can't say they were very keen, but I did turn up and try. And then I got to know this gentleman who rang the youth club, that was part of the youth club, and he knew someone, I don't know who, in BSA Tools, and told them about my problem, that I was not going to have a job because of this, you know. And yet it was costing a great deal of money for me to train. I mean, when we went to the Olympics in 1952, apart from the fact that it was rationing, and every time we went to train somewhere, perhaps it was Yorkshire, you had to take your food coupons with you and that sort of thing. And there was there were clothing coupons as well. And yet, when we went over, we were given a blazer, a dress for the parade dress, a hat, a bag, and a navy blue skirt, and a long list of other things we had to buy: blouses, gloves, certain handbags, and it was quite an expensive thing to do. So, my parents sacrificed quite a bit actually for me to get there in the end, and so I, you know, I was glad to have to be working, because at least I felt I was contributing something towards it, although, you know, as a youngster like that, I wasn't earning a lot in the office. No.
So you went to work in the office?
In then? The office, yes. Yeah. I wasn't actually on the factory floor. They were all men on the factory floor. And my job was walking from end to end, because I worked in what they call material control. And so I took a lot of leg pulling every time I walked down the office. They used to whistle in time in my footsteps.
So what was your work here? You know,
I was a material control clerk. What it meant was that it was a big factory. They made all sorts of things, and they specialised as well in scientific equipment and laboratory equipment and little microscopes and things like that. I mean, I had nothing to do with that other than when they needed to make a new part, they needed a voucher to go to the steel stores with to get the materials to do that. So my job was issuing these and keeping the books and making sure that the stock was always there so that they could order more if it was running down. So it wasn't a very responsible job.
Did you enjoy that job?
Yes, I liked it. I liked it. The men spoiled me rotten, so that was nice. You know, I used to get chocolates on my desk and things like that.
Was there anybody there that you knew when you went to work there?
Only one. He was a gentleman who used to go around checking on the work, and he had been a boxer in his day. He'd won the Golden Gloves competition, and my brother had done some boxing, and he had coached my brother, so I got to meet him as well. I wish I could think of his name now, but I can't.
So where was the factory?
It was off Curran Road. It was part of what used to be the unit that my mother worked in the wartime, when she was making these huge, heavy shells. It was. They had great long factories for munitions factories, and it was in one of those. Yes, I don't know whether the company still exists. I know that factory doesn't. That particular building doesn't. No.
Did you have to have an interview to get the job?
Yes, I did have an interview.
Can you remember anything about it?
Not a lot. I think they were more interested in my gymnastic career than anything else, you know. And they couldn't understand that anybody so little, because I was 4'11", could possibly have been doing what I needed to do. But I mean, gymnasts perform best if they are of small stature, actually, so it was built for the job, but they seemed to think I needed to be some sort of Amazon, which was not necessary.
So why do you say they were quite supportive to you, the factory then?
Oh yes.
Why do you think that was?
Well, I'd like to think it was because they wanted someone in Cardiff to be in the Olympic Games, but I can't really say I know. It might just have been jobs for the boys, because this gentleman that had made the request for them to find me a job, I mean, I don't know what contacts he had with the company or with whom within the company either, but so I don't know. But yes, they were supportive. And then if I needed extra time off for training, you know, sometimes it would be training away and you'd travel up on a Friday, they were quite happy for me to go. So they were very good, very good. British Small Arms, the BSA was for, British Small Arms. It's the full name of the company. It's just full on tools, BSA Tools.
Mm-hmm. So, and what was your exact work then? Was it, did you say clerking?
Yes, clerking, that was all. I used to have to walk down the factory with the steel stores if it looked as they were running out of something, and then the men used to whistle in time with my feet all the way down, you know, to torment me. But yes, it was just really... I suppose it was quite responsible in a way, because I had to make sure that all the materials, and there were so many different metals and things that were required for the various jobs, that there was always stock there. Not that I ordered the stock, I would pass on the need and someone else would do the ordering.
Right, I see.
So I suppose it was quite responsible, really. And I was the only one doing it, so, yes. You know, I was making sure them, giving them the notes in order to acquire the metals they needed for every job that was going on in the factory. So I suppose it was quite responsible. I can't say I felt a great weight of responsibility at the time. When I think of it now, you know, I mean, if they'd have had the wrong metal for a start, I'd have been up the road in no time.
I thought you were going to say in for the high jump.
Yeah. That would have been a good thing for me, yeah.
Did you How did you feel about the men's behaviour? Did you find it threatening? Or?
No. It was all in good fun. They usually used to whistle dee 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 in time with my feet, you know. And however I changed my walk, they would adjust the rhythm, and they would call out to me, you know, "Are you coming out with me tonight?" and things like that. But there was never anything offensive or abusive, and I never felt threatened.
And there was nothing physical?
No. They were very protective of me, actually. I think perhaps because I was little and young, they were very protective. Maybe some of the older girls had a bit more, but not me anyway.
That was the Charlie Chaplin tune, was it?
Yes. Yes. Yeah. Did da did da as I went down.
What about, were there other local people working in the factory that...
Yes, I think a lot of the people that worked there were local. But of course some of the skills were quite acute because they used to make instruments, surgical instruments and things like that. So although I'm quite sure part of their work was large scale work, you know, when it came to the intricate making of things, then they could quite possibly have been shipping in specialists for that. I really wouldn't know. All the offices for that factory were upstairs, except mine. I wasn't the only one in it, but the office I was in was the only one that was actually on a factory floor for convenience, for its purpose, you see. But I don't think the others came in contact with the men much at all. And there were no women working in a factory at all.
On the floor now?
On the floor, yeah. None.
What about women in the office with you? Were there women?
Yes, there were women there as well, doing various jobs to do with, with orders and things like that. You know, things that were coming in that needed to be done. Mine was just a small part of that, in that, just making sure the materials were there for them, and that they could access them when they needed. And there was down the end, like a big forge where they melted stuff, and they did, I can't remember the name of that bit.
Furnace.
There was a big furnace end down the end. We had a man fell in, actually, the molten liquid, molten metal while I was there.
Oh,
yeah. Didn't find any of him at all, just disappeared.
Oh.
Mm. But I wasn't witness to that.
No. Can you remember your first day at work and what your impressions were of...
What the first day in BSA?
In BSA. Yeah.
I was very nervous because I didn't know anything about the company or anything about what I was going to have to be doing. So I suppose I was nervous in a way, but there was a lady who had been doing that job for some time that was retiring, and she was very good. She sort of helped me get to grips with it before she left. So they gave me an opportunity for some training with her before I was left on my own to deal with it, you know. But it wasn't a comfortable office because it was on the factory floors. It wasn't carpeted or, you know, and it was a bit dirty at times because there was a lot of metal dust and so. It should come out because it didn't have a lid on our office. We went up to the roof. But no, I was quite happy there.
How long did the training go on for?
Just about 3 weeks, I think. That was about it. And then, of course, there was a scene that the manager of that particular department was in a side office off hours. So if I'd have had any trouble, I could have sought help there, I'm sure. But I can't remember needing to do it.
Mm.
It wasn't a difficult job.
No, but do you feel that you were well trained by them?
Not really, because the lady who did it with me, she made sure that I understood it all, but nobody checked after that I was okay. So right. If you look at it like that way, there was no. But I suppose you could say they were trusting. So, yeah.
How about the physical appearance of the building? You've told me how you felt, but. When you walked in there, what was it? Can you describe?
Oh,
it
yes,
like?
It was quite dismal. It was like a corrugated building, really, with concrete walls and things. It was an old munitions factory, and I mean, they threw them up in the war because of the need, and so there weren't any finer points to it. The girls in the office upstairs had it, they had more amenable surroundings, but I can't say I ever felt that we were neglected in any way. There was a canteen there that catered for us very well, although I used to go home for lunch on my bike, but Yes, it was a typical dusty, noisy factory.
It was noisy, was it?
Yes, some parts of it were noisy. The end where they made the fine instruments was at our end, and that was quiet. But as you went down, so it got noisier.
What about the smell? What did it smell of?
It smelled dreadful when I first went there, but I got used to it and I had a phone and didn't smell it at all then. it was just an oily engineering type smell. Nothing really offensive, but it was when I first went there, I wasn't too keen, but as I say, you got used to it. Yeah. Didn't matter.
What did the women in the offices upstairs do then?
Well, they did all sorts of paperwork. There was a drawing office there, and because they were designing things, designing equipment and implements and so on. And so there were mostly men up there in the drawing office, and that, but there were some women there as well, and clerical workers and secretaries and so on. And to be honest, we didn't have any reason not to, but we didn't have a great deal to do with them. We could see them in the canteen, but when we went, there were four men and three women in that county, myself in where I was. And so when we went for our break, we three were always together on the table talking. We'd speak to the others, but we didn't really have a lot to do with them.
Were the drafts women there as well?
Oh, I think there was one. The rest were all men.
Mm. Yes.
And I think the woman was only really there because she did there was no photocopy, and they had a machine you turned around inked. I forget what they called that. It was like a sort of copier machine, but the lady that was there did a bit of drawing, but to be honest, I think she did most of that sort of thing.
Mm-hmm. So can you remember how much you were paid?
No, I can't. Right. I can't. It was only just a few pounds. It wasn't a lot.
How did it seem to you at that age, though?
Well, it was more than I was getting in Boots the Chemist, so I was quite pleased about that. But it really was just junior's rate, you know. I think I was only considered to be a junior, although when I look back on it now, it was a fairly responsible job to get it right, you know.
So what did you do with your money?
I lived at home. My mother used to put my money aside for me so that I could get the train, you know, towards my training and things. And as I say, when I went to the games, there was a great list of things to buy. So it wasn't, it was an expensive business. And all the training, if you had to get there on your own, so it was your train fare. And my mum would never let me go if I needed a new coat till I had a new coat, you know, that sort of thing. And then there was always a gift for the lady you'd be staying with, because someone would put you up there. My mother would cry because she had to part with her tea coupon, and I didn't drink tea. But as far as the money was concerned, it sort of went in this pot, my parents didn't have any of it. They just used it as parts of the support that I needed, and it was only a small part of the support I needed.
I was going to ask, were there any unions in the factory? Were you aware of anything?
I wasn't aware of it. There must have been for the men, I would think, because they had several professions there. So there must have been for the men. But I was certainly not asked to join a union.
So you weren't in it?
I wasn't in a union.
And you weren't aware of office union, were you?
No.
Did you feel that you were fairly treated?
Yes, I was quite happy there.
Yes, and do you feel that everybody was fairly treated,
Yes, the ones that I knew, I heard no one complain. I can't say much about the men in the factory, because I really wouldn't know anything about them. But in our office, everyone seemed to be okay.
Were you aware of any disputes, though?
No, never. And I was there until I was 19. And during that time, I wasn't aware of any. I did have a good deal of help on one occasion, because I used to ride a bike to work, and we had a terrible snowstorm. And when I was in school, I never missed a half-day school all my education. My mother would say, you'll feel better by the time you get there, So in the whole of my schooling, I never even lost a half day. And I think that stayed with me. It helped me with my gymnastics and with my the rest of my future. It taught me commitment, you know. And so the snow came pouring down and I got on my bike to go. And as I turned a corner, I lived in Grangetown. It was Grange Gardens, I used to cycle past. And as I turned the corner, so this great lot of snow flew in my face. And I put my head down and went into the back of the tractor on my bike and clean over the top and knocked myself out. So the park keeper took me into his hut. I mean, he wouldn't dare do it today, would they? But the park keeper took me into his hut until he felt I was well enough to get up. And he wanted to go home. But I said, no, I must go to work. I'm on my way to work. So I pushed my bent bike to work. And when I got there, they were so concerned about me, they wanted me to go up to the hospital, which in those days was St. David's Hospital. Mm. And so the boss had a Rolls and a chauffeur. So I had my first ride in a Rolls Royce going to the hospital with my concussion.
And did you have concussion?
Yes, I had concussion.
And this was before the games, was it?
No, that was after.
Oh, after
that was after.
Mm-hmm. You talked a bit, I just ask you about this, because you talked a bit about this man who had a dreadful injury and well disappeared. Were you aware of any other injuries on the factory floor?
No, I don't think I was. I mean, they had a nurse on site, and there used to be, I think there was a man who once got his hands caught in the machine, and because they used to act a bit dangerously and sometimes work without a guard down because the guard made the job difficult. And there was one man who caught his hands in there. But that's, apart from that dreadful one where the man disappeared, I don't recall any more. There must have been, but they would have been small and insignificant injuries, I would think.
Yeah. Do you think the work was dangerous?
It must have been in some instances, if the man could catch his hand and if somebody could fall in at that.
Mm. Mm.
But my job wasn't dangerous.
No. So let's go on to the hours and the holidays. So how many days did you work a week?
Five. And right. It was 9 to 5.
Right.
Clock in and clock out.
You had to clock in, did you?
Mm.
Yes. And were there any shifts worked? Were you aware of that?
No. I don't think even the factory workers worked shifts. I think there were set hours there. I would imagine if they had an emergency or a big order that had to be met, that people would have turned to. But I think as a general rule, it stuck to. But the men had longer hours. They started at 8, I think, in the morning, and we started at 9.
Right.
And I think they finished about the same time as us.
So if they did have, I presume they'd work a bit of overtime if they had an order, would you ever be asked to work?
No,
on?
No. Because I just have to make sure that the material that they needed after hours was available to them.
Mm. And did you have any breaks during your working day?
Yes, we had a tea break. We didn't use to. We had a canteen, but we used to get a tea or coffee and bring it to the office. And then, of course, there was a lunch break and there was a canteen there. But I didn't. I lived, I had to get on my bike. It was the top end of Grangetown near town, and I lived in Clive Street, which was not so far away. So I go home on my bike and come back.
How long would it take you on the bike?
About a quarter of an hour each way, and we had an hour for lunch, so it was enough.
So, and you always went home, did you?
Usually, yeah. Sometimes I went into town and did a bit of shopping because it wasn't far. But I wasn't much of a shopaholic then, so I didn't do much of that.
You had your mind on greater things. So you never used the canteen then, did you?
Yes, I did occasionally, but mostly just for coffee.
Right.
And to get the bosses. Teas and coffees every day, and he hated it if I brought him back biscuits with currants in because he said they could be dead flies.
Yes,
that's quite.
So, were you aware of what kind of food the canteen provided? Was it like a full kind of?
I don't think there was a lot of selection, but it was cooked. I think there were probably two selections, and there certainly wasn't a cold counter.
Right. Mm.
Yeah. But those were not long after the war years, you know.
Yes. So what about afternoon break? Did you have an afternoon break?
Yes, we had an afternoon break. But we usually just carried on with our work and had a cup of tea or coffee at our desk, you know.
Mm.
Whereas we'd stop for 10 minutes or so in the morning. And then we had an hour for lunch.
So, did you have an annual holiday allowance with pay then?
Yes, a fortnight was all.
And you could... Oh, I'm asking.
Yes, you could book it in. You see, your own time, you could apply. You put in your holiday hours, and I don't think I was ever refused.
Right. Did you ever take more than that?
No, I don't think so.
Was that insufficient, was it?
When we went to the games, I probably did. Must have done then, because we were there a bit longer, but I should remember that, but I'm afraid I don't.
You said you were paid for your holidays. Was that for that just that fortnight?
Well, they continued to pay me even though I was... I had my holidays as well as that time for the games. I didn't have to take my holiday quota to go to the games. They gave me my holidays as well.
And they paid you?
They paid me, yes. They paid me while I was away, yes. They were a very good company to work for, I think.
Right.
Because I did have on one occasion a problem with a man I'd met on a train and spoken to and who found out where I worked, and he got to be pestering and an awful nuisance, and our managing director got him the sack from his company, and he was quite a high up in the business. But so they did care about their staff.
Yes.
I mean, this had happened out of working hours. This is when I was on one of my train journeys for training, you know, and a gentleman just got talking, and the carriages were over the corridor, you know, you'd be sat with people, and it was a long way. I was going right up to changing trains at Manchester and going on and up to Yorkshire. So, and this man just befriended me, I thought, and carried my case when I went to change trains. But in the conversation, I had told him where I worked, and he contacted me and made a nuisance of himself.
Oh, dear.
Mm. Yeah. But my boss sorted it out.
Right.
Mm-hmm. And not the director of the company sorted it out, not my immediate boss.
Right.
Mm. So they did look after their girls.
Do you think you were a kind of feather in their cap then, do you think?
I don't know.
Do you think you were special, do you think? Or would they have done that for...
I think they'd have done it for anyone. I can't say, you know, when I was in my home environment and when I was in my local environment, I was a star because I was going to be an Olympian. But when I was in work, I was really just one of the girls. So I think the treatment I received, everyone would have had. They were very good employees.
Except for the holidays they gave.
Yes, that's right.
They were the time off.
And they took me in when, but they weren't looking for someone to do, and they took me in because I had a need. So they were good company. I don't know whether BSA still exists. I'd like to know.
Yes.
I'll Google it.
What about bank holidays? Did you have bank holidays?
Yes, bank holidays off, always, yes.
Right. Did you ever go on holiday anywhere else except for your training?
Oh, yes, we always had holidays from a small child.
Right.
My parents weren't well off, but we lived the life of Riley, you know. We had holidays in cottages in West Wales and Wye Valley and... I mean, sometimes we'd travel there on the back of an open-back lorry. But we'd get there and pitch tents or whatever. And we were always at the beach. My father taught us to swim when we were very young. My mother could run like the wind, so she used to come dashing up and down, running fast. And, I had a very happy, busy, healthy childhood.
Mm-hmm. So you said your father was a very good swimmer?
Yes, he was. He used to... They used to swim in the Taff River a lot in those days,
mm-hmm.
and they used to have the Taff race every year.
Right.
And there was a man called, I've got him in this book. He always won the Taff swim, and he used to train for it by doing it. And my father used to go with him and used to lead all the way, but didn't have the money to enter. He was one of a large family that had neither father nor mother, who had both died. And he was the breadwinner from the age of 14.
Mm.
And so there was never the money for him to enter the Taff race. But he used to swim with Radmilovic, a man called Radmilovic.
Mm.
He used to win it every year. But my father would lead him or could beat him every time, but didn't have the money to enter.
Right.
Very sad.
Mm.
Very sad.
What about your mother? Did your mother race? She
could run, but she didn't. She wasn't. There was no athletics in our area that I know of at my mother's time. But she played baseball, and she could get round those bases like a hare. And she had a crippled sister who had a club foot, who could bat like mad and was a very good backstop.
Yeah.
So when it was her sister's turn, the sister would hit the ball and my mother would run for her.
Oh, really?
But then she'd have to do her own run as well.
Yeah, yeah.
So, you know, she was very much that way. But she'd had a very hard life and childhood from a you know, in acute poverty. I mean, she... Before she left school, and she left school at about 13, she was already scrubbing out offices that she had to take walk about half an hour to get to before school and after school. And then when she finished school, it was a brush factory. And then she was made, she thought, oh, this is good, now I can be a factory girl instead. But no, she had to do the scrubbing in the morning and the night and the factory work. So she'd come up the hard way, you know. And my dad, as I say, he's... His father there,
right,
that was his father, was an engineer on the tugboats in Cardiff Dock. He had dropped dead on the boat with a heart attack.
Oh, dear.
And his wife had already died in the flu epidemic after the First World War. And she'd died with the youngest child was 6 months when she died.
Mm-hmm.
My father was the oldest boy, and there were nine of them all together. And then he was brought home. He knocked the door and they opened the door and they carried him in feet first and laid him on the table and walked out and left the children with the dead father.
Oh, dear.
So he was working hard right from the beginning. So, you know, in those days, I was in a fortunate time when if you had skills and a bit of financial help, you could do it. I mean, nowadays you get lots of financial help and I'm pleased to see it. But in my mother and father's day, there was no help at all.
Mm.
So their chances of doing anything in sport were nil, really.
Yes.
Yeah.
But baseball, were they both from Cardiff?
Yes, both Grangetown
both
people.
From Grangetown, yeah. Because baseball was a big thing for women, wasn't it?
Oh, yes, it was.
Yes,
it was.
Yes.
My mother played for Gripperley Mills, although she never worked in Gripperley Mills. But she played for Gripperley Mills because her sister worked there, but she also then, but my mother played for her team. So I say my mother worked in a brush factory. But, yes, they played for Gripperley Mills.
All right. That's really interesting, isn't it? Yes. The whole thing about women and factories and sport is...
That's right,
is
yes.
very interesting, actually.
Yes.
So, did you... Were there any social activities in the factory that were arranged by the workers?
Not that I can recall. No, I don't think there were any. I think we'd... the last working day before Christmas, I think a lot of them used to go to a pub for a celebration, but I was never one for drinking, so I just used to wish a Merry Christmas and go home, you know.
Yes.
I wasn't very good at drinking. So.
Well, you were a bit younger than most of them as well.
Yes, I was. And my parents weren't drinking. I mean, my mother would have a sherry at Christmas or something, you know, but they weren't pub people. They had nothing against pub people. My grandfather certainly was one. My mother's father was. But, no, they did. So it wasn't something that interested me. And there was nothing... There were no outings. Like, I mean, I worked with the gas board now and on Wednesday.
Yeah,
going off
yeah.
on the gas board drink lease outing. But there were no outings in this factory, no. It was just work.
Just work, yes. So when did you decide to leave?
When I was pregnant.
Right, and how...
I got married at 19.
Right.
And I had my baby at 20. My husband was at sea. When he went off to sea after the wedding, we didn't know I was pregnant, and when he came back, my son was 6 weeks old, and my husband was not very welcome.
All right. So you stayed on working then after you got married?
Yes, I worked until I was 7.5 months pregnant.
Right.
And then, of course, I stopped.
Right.
And didn't go back.
How did your husband feel about you working, still working, you know, when you were married then?
Oh, well, that was fine because we were hoping to buy a house, you know, we were both going to be saving for a house, and of course it didn't work out that way for me. So,
yes.
It was a bit of a shock, but a welcome shock eventually.
So, what did you do afterwards? Did you have more than one child?
Yes, I had two boys.
Yeah.
Two boys. And I didn't go back to work until the youngest was 14.
And what did you do when you went back to work?
I became a network analyst with the gas board.
Right.
It changed as time went down and went on to computers, but what it came down to was that you made sure that if there was a new factory going down at the end of the road, the people up there, the lady up the other end could still boil a kettle. So they had to put in governors or extra pipework, and all we did was supply the engineers with all the information, and they made the decisions on what it should do. And then eventually, I mean, we started off just with maps and pens and paper, but eventually it was all done on computers, and I had three computers that could all talk to each other from different parts. North Wales, West Wales and mine could all talk to each other.
And did you do that for the duration of your...
Yes, until I retired. Well, from the time my son was 14, the youngest was 14, so let's think now, he was born in 58, so that was 68, 72. So that from 1972 until I was 58... Which was, I was born in 48. So that, where does that take us? It's a long time.
Yes. When were you born, sorry? 1934 and
58. Yeah, but I started working there when my son was...
So is that 92?
Probably.
1992? 58 and 34? 92.
Yeah.
Yes.
So, yeah.
So you retired about...
Yes, they were dismantling the gas industry, and our engineering department was going to Birmingham, and I had a chance to work there if I wanted to, but I only worked part-time anyway. And I was 2 years off retirement. I was just less than 2 years off retirement. That was when retirement was at 60. So I opted for redundancy and went.
Mm-hmm. So tell me then about the parallel universe of your sports career. Tell me what happened in Helsinki.
Oh, it was amazing.
Well, from the training bit then, to link it to the factory.
Yes. Yeah. To link it to the factory. Yeah. Well, I had a very good coach, a man called Cecil Guy. And he'd been an ex-PTI, and after the war, in the wartime he was a PTI in this country, and then after the war several of them were given jobs in what used to be the ARP huts around Cardiff to set up recreational activities for people who had only known the war and air raids and this sort of thing. And so he started, there was a bowling green, and he did bowling, table tennis, football. He'd played for Cardiff City Seconds himself in his youth before the war, and he did gymnastics as well, and used to run whist drives and things for people and in this little hut, and so that's where all my gymnastics started. And where did you want me to go from here?
No, I just want. I'm sorry, but what does PTI mean?
A physical training instructor.
All right. Okay.
He was an RAF PTI, and when they were demobbed, some of them managed, because of course when the men came after the war, they were in jobs for all of them, and he had that job, and he was an absolutely brilliant coach, and I used to do all sorts of sports, table tennis and keep fit and country dancing and girl guides, I did all sorts of things, but and played the piano quite well actually. When it came down to it in the end, I knew what I wanted to do. I'd found my field of expertise, really. I was built for it. I had wonderful support at home. And I had this coach that knew very little about gymnastics before we started this club, other than, this sort of thing. And he learned a lot and taught me a lot. And it just progressed from there, really.
When did you start getting interested in gymnastics?
Well, I used to do something in Ninian Park School when I was a junior. They used to run a Keep Fit Night, and mostly it was country dance and things like that, but they also used to do a little bit where you jumped over a box, but there was no springboard or anything, and there was just a coconut mat, and when you landed on it, you disappeared in a cloud of dust, And so I started there, and then when I heard... After the war, and during the war as well, they had what they called holidays at home, And so the things would go on in the parks for people to have some entertainment. It was very well thought out, actually. I can remember as a child, we used to go hear bands play and watch different activities going on in the park. And on one occasion, I saw this gym coach with some girls and boys, and they were vaulting over a box and tumbling on the mat. And I thought, oh, I'd like to try that. So I went to ask to join, and I was told that you had to be 12, and I was 11. So I told him I was 12. So with a blatant lie, I got into the club. And then I just started from there. And he must have spotted the talent, you know. I mean, I still coach gymnastics now. Yeah. I've got another class tonight. But you can pick out the... And usually if they're a bit on the dwarf side, you know, if you're a bit of a midget, you've got a better chance of being a gymnast. And so... and he encouraged me, and he was very supportive, and he did a lot of learning himself, and he travelled a lot with me as well, which I think he'd be unlikely to do these days, a man with a little girl. But my parents trusted him implicitly, and used to come and to visit my parents quite regularly to explain what was planned and what was going on. So, you know, I think they were quite happy about that. But that's how it really got going. And then when I got to be selected and we went over to the games, it was so exciting. I can tell you a funny story. Would you like to hear it?
Yes.
Well, when we got to go on the plane, we gymnasts were all the midgets on the plane, you see. And one person on the plane was MacDonald Bailey, who was supposed to going to win the gold medal in the sprints. He didn't, actually. Kerb McKenzie from Kenya won it, and that's another story, but not a very savoury one. So they wanted to film MacDonald Bailey going up the steps and going to the plane, and they thought it would be interesting if they had these little girls going up at the same time, because he was like 9'4", you know, I mean, he was enormous and very black, and such a gentleman. So anyway, we all had to get off the plane, with our team and that, and then so we're going up the steps now. We had to wave, and it was Paddy News, so the camera was taking it on. Well, my mother was very worried because no one in our family had ever been up in an aeroplane, and my mother was quite convinced we were going to crash. So I had to tell her. She made me promise that when I got there, I would send a telegram. Don't spend a lot of money, she said. Just put arrived safely. Right, so I do that. So anyway, we went. I passed out on the plane because I'm a terrible traveller, but that's another story. And then when I got there, I sent my mother the telegram, and it said, arrived safely. See Paddy News. So, oh, she must be on Paddy News. So they went to the Capitol Cinema, she and my father, and they used to have two films then and lots of other bits going on. And my mother's backside was making buttons because it was not coming on, you know. And eventually it was da-da-da-da-da-da-da-da and cock-a-doodle-doo, this thing. And going over to the Olympics today, and there we were going up the steps, and my mother shot up in the middle of the cinema waving at me and saying, there's our Gwyn. My father was saying, sit down, woman, sit down. So she embarrassed him no end, but she was so overcome by it, she had to wave back and stand up and shout out to do it. So it was funny. But when we got over there, I'm surprised we did any work at all, because we'd had a lot of rationing over here. And I can remember sending my mother a card saying, we're allowed 2 eggs. You know, that was unheard of. You could actually have 2 eggs on your plate. Mm-hmm. And there was no rationing. And we ate ourselves silly. I'm surprised we managed to do any gymnastics because the food was fabulous. And but we had a good time over there. But we did. But when we got there, we found out that all the work we'd been doing, which had been translated from the French, was incorrect translation. So they used to do set work and voluntary work in those days, so all the set work was wrong, so we had to spend our time getting it right.
How were you selected?
We had trials, and they also had, in those days, that was the last of the games where the women did a team drill, and they watched you do that as well, and different ones would take different places and so on. And I was very good at dance, and so I think that helped me get into the team as well, was the fact that I was rather good at the team drill, and some of the girls were a bit on the stiff side, you know, moving. But I top scored for the team. I was the youngest. No, I wasn't the youngest in the team. Valerie Mullins was the youngest, and she was 3 days younger than me, and she was from Swansea. But I top scored in the games for our team, but we didn't come anywhere.
And how many of you from Wales went?
In that
British
Games,
team?
We were the majority. We were the majority. Let's see, there were three from Swansea, Sissy Davis, Valen Ryans, and Margot Morgan. The first reserve was from Swansea too, but she didn't go. And then it was myself and Margaret Thomas. Five of us, and it was a team of eight. So we were two from Cardiff and three from Swansea in the women's team. We were five of the eight.
Wow.
Mm. We did really well.
That was a spectacular result,
yes,
then, wasn't
it? Yes, it was. It was indeed.
And how did the team do?
Badly.
Oh.
It was mostly because the set, you did sets on voluntaries, the set work had been wrongly translated. Mm. And some of them really struggled to do the bar set the new way. And I was very strong, and I did quite well on it. But as a team, we sent down. And also when we got there, we found that the vault, we'd been used to a springboard, not like they have today, but it had a thing across, and it had some spring. And when we got there, it was what we would have called a beatboard, which was just a board and in planks going down, and it was solid. Yes. You could jump on it, but there was absolutely no spring at all, And so nobody could get over on this handspring vault. You had to get a full handstand and spring off it. And that was the set vault, and because we had more complicated voluntary vaults on that, but most of the girls couldn't get up. And then I thought, well, in those days, they used to vault with the board in quite close. And I thought, well, if we moved the board back and ran a bit further, perhaps we could dive and get up there. So myself and another girl, actually, from our team, managed to get up and do it. And they used to train in gyms then, and a country would have an hour or 2 hours, I can't remember the amount of time, followed by another and another, and following us on one occasion was the Russian team. And they had glass door, and they were out waiting outside, but he was looking through the glass door. So he came in and asked whether he could film me doing this vault. And he had this sort of cine camera. I've still got one upstairs. And he had that sort of cine camera, and he took films of me doing it. Anyway, we didn't see them working all the time. But when it came to the finals day, they had the finals top on each apparatus. And we got there early so we could get a front seat. And we were sat, and it was right down, the front seat was right on the floor, not as it would be now, I've been about. And one of the Russian girls won, and her vault was very poor, actually. And she got the medal, and he brought her over to me, seeing me sitting in the front, and he took the medal off her and hung it round my neck and shook his head and took it back and put it on her and went. Yeah, because he knew she shouldn't have won it. Yeah,
yeah.
But what they did in those days, it was some... they would, if they didn't want you to win, they'd mark you, they wouldn't knock you off a bit, they'd knock you off a lot and claim that it must have been a dreadful mistake in there somewhere, so they'd mark you right down.
Yeah.
So I don't think I was even top scorer for vault for our team. I can't remember.
Mm-hmm.
I can't remember.
But still an amazing experience.
Oh, amazing, amazing. Yeah. People from all countries. We watched the men's as well, and the Indian men had took their turbans off. And their hair was up in the top, all tied with a great floppy white bow. And as they were working, it would be coming undone by the yard, So little things like that. And the Japanese men, they marched past, because we always got there early and sat in the front. And as they marched on, they left a waft of perfume behind. And in those days, men didn't wear aftershave and things, but the Japs did. And we used to watch them go, oh, God, they smelt lovely, but we thought it was a bit sissy. But there were lots of things like that. There were quite a different world to anything we've lived in.
Yeah, I just wanted to ask you about any other games, Olympics and Commonwealth
and
whatever.
Well, Commonwealth Games only took in gymnastics only came into the Commonwealth Games after I'd retired.
Oh, really?
Yes, yes.
So gymnastics,
there was no gymnastics
in Cardiff, 58?
No, none. My husband was in it, but he was in it as a highboard diver.
Oh, I see.
But no, there wasn't any. But for the Olympics, they had... they didn't send a women's team to Australia in 56. They had three trials. I won all three trials. But it was decided that because I was at that time a mother... it was not right for me to be taken away from my child, so I was denied the chance to go.
They decided that.
They decided that. And I mean, we still lived in a big house, in part of a big house that my mother was in, and my children had two mothers. They wouldn't have missed me. but anyway, we didn't go. And then in 1970, that was one child then. Then in 1960, I captained a team that went to Rome and top scored there for Britain, but we didn't come anywhere. No.
Right.
So I did go again. But I've done loads since, because I've travelled a lot with British teams to World Championships, not to Olympics, but World Championships, European Championships and Internationals. There's not a country in Europe I haven't been to, so I've had some wonderful experiences. The sport's been very good to me. Very good.
Will you be going to the Commonwealth Games this
year? No, it's in Glasgow, but yeah. I won't be going. I don't work high level anymore. I'm interested to watch it, you know, but we're at the gym club I'm running now. We used to have the main hall in the Pier Pavilion, and when money was raised to do up the building, which was desperately needed, we were promised by the council that we could have a church on the top of the hill, which was derelict. And there was money given to them by a building company to do it up for us. But they reneged on that. They're now going to sell it off for flats, which is typical of our council, I'm afraid. And so we now rent a factory unit just on the outskirts of Barry, although we're Penarth Gymnastics Club. And we've got lots of members there. And as long as we can pay the rent, which is £25,000 a year, we'll keep going. And we're the only ones that deal with special needs in the area, so the youngsters come to us, you know.
So tell me, when did you retire as a gymnast?
In 1961.
Right, and when did you become a coach?
I was already coaching before I retired, but I didn't qualify as a coach until later.
Right.
And I eventually got to an international coaching standard.
Right.
So, you know, it sort of goes to certain club, area, national and so on. And I got to international standard. So I travelled a lot with British teams.
Right, so and you were coaching at a top level then?
Yes.
Yeah.
Yeah, so I've had a girl that was in the Olympics.
Right.
Pamela Hopkins, she was. Pamela Hardwick, she is now. And two girls that have been in the Commonwealth Games in the past. But to be honest, I don't aim for the dizzy heights anymore because I don't approve of the training programmes for small children that there are.
Yes.
I don't approve them losing school to train. And I see too many young children retire with overuse injuries. Children, not adults, children. And so to get to the standard that you have to get to, you've got to give up a lot and take a lot of risk. And I'm not prepared for my children to do that. If they've got the talent and want that, I'm quite happy to help them move on to someone who will, but I won't be part of it.
Mm.
I'm an old-fashioned biddy, and I don't like the way it goes.
Yes, we've seen that with some people in the Olympics and tennis and things.
Yes, yes.
Now, haven't we? in the last 20 years.
I mean, we've got children now. When I started gymnastics, my coach didn't take anyone until they were 12, and I wasn't even 12, but now they're retiring at 9. I mean, this is appalling. I shouldn't say this about my own sport, but it is my hobby. It's one thing I feel very strongly about, very, very strongly.
Tell me about your work now with disabled people.
Well, I designed a programme of work for children from school children with disabilities, for schools to take part in. And I managed to get some sponsorship from Rotary, who fund most of it. It's still going now, although I haven't been involved with it myself now for 4 years. I ran it since, 30-odd years I did it on my kitchen table until I got to 800 taking part in a year. And so it goes on through schools all throughout Wales. And it's a gradual programme, a progressive programme of work, so that you know, the vault, for instance, is stand on a very small thing and jump off, and that's the vault, until the higher level ones actually go over a low box. So it goes through four ranges of work. And that still continues, and I was offered a marvellous job in Germany working there. They were offering me a fabulous wage and a flat and a Mercedes, and I didn't want to go to Germany. It's Saudi Arabia use it, because they saw a display of some of this work and asked me for a copy of the programme, and I understand they're using it in their schools. So I'm quite proud of that. My latest reason to feel proud is that three of my gymnasts, two with Down syndrome and one autistic, severely autistic, have just gained their coaching awards. They're qualified as assistant coaches. They'll never be class responsible, but they've got the dignity of being. And they take, on a Thursday, we have a beginner's special needs class, and then the advanced ones after, or the older, sometimes they're not so advanced, they're just getting a bit older. And they conduct the whole of that class. They run it under supervision, of course. We're always there, myself and a couple of others. But we can just sit and chat because they just do it brilliantly. And they've got their coaching award, so I'm really proud of that. We already had one Down syndrome boy that had got a coaching award, but he was just sort of, that was exceptional. He still coaches with us now, and he's 38. He coaches mainstream. The other three now coach the disabled themselves. So that's nice. And we've always got someone in the British Special Olympics team, wherever it is. We've always got someone, and they always win. They always win. They do really well. I feel that the people think this is wonderful things for the special people with disabilities, because we've got physical and learning disability. But to me, the ones who benefit the most are the mainstream children, because they train together and they get so used to them being there that they're never going to stop in the street, and their children will never stop in the street and stare at someone who doesn't look quite the same. And all our social events are together. You know, we have Christmas parties, we have discos, we have outings, and they're all together. And it's not unusual for somebody about, say, 6 years old to come up and say, Gareth's round the corner and he's crying, and Gareth's 32. Mm. So they never get told anything, they just accept what there is, they accept them for what they are. We don't give lessons in how to deal with them, they just treat them as part of the class, and they get to work it out for themselves. And I think, for all the work we've done in getting some of the special needs to quite high level of performance, I think the greatest achievement we have is the acceptance of the mainstreamers with them. Mm. Yeah, so I'm proud of that.
Can I just ask you one more thing? Why did you get interested in disabilities?
Well, it wasn't out of choice. We had a running gym club. We used to work in Stanwell School at the time when they had a big funding grant to modernise. They threw us out. But when we were there, I was asked to go to the YMCA in Cardiff, which was in the parade, and to see some of their gymnasts working. And I was quite impressed, although I felt they were treating them like disabled and they'd like to be treated like proper people, you know. Anyway, that's just a personal thing. But then the girl, it was a man and husband and wife, and the girl got pregnant. So they asked us whether we would take their class over for a little while, until after she'd had the baby. So I said, would I take it over? And I said, no, well, I can't, because I lived in Grangetown and I was training in Penarth, coaching in Penarth, and they wanted me, and I said, if they can come over to us, we'll put on a special, we'll move a class back and bring them in front, and they can come over if they'll be happy with that. So that was fine. So over they came, and the biggest problem we had was behavioural. And I thought, well, I'm not putting up with this. So we got them to toe the party line in no time at all. And once they did, they had a much better time. They enjoyed it more. And we had about, I said to the parents, we'll take them for a month. Then we'll have a little discussion about whether you want us to keep them until Angela has had this baby. And so the parents came in and they said, and I overstepped the mark, actually, because I said, well, one thing we can do, I said, we can make them more socially acceptable. What I'd received was not socially acceptable, and there was no reason why some of these should behave the way they are, and they were always going to be, I felt, outcast. So some of the parents were a bit shocked at me saying that, but I really felt that that's what we had to offer. And anyway, they said, yes, they'd like them to stay. But Angela and her husband never came back. So we just carried on having them, and we got so involved with them, we wouldn't be without having them like that. Mm-hmm. But it was it wasn't a deliberate thing, it was quite an accidental that we took them up.
Yeah. I'll just ask you one more thing about the factory. Looking back now, how do you feel about the time you spent working in the factory?
I loved it. Yes, they made, They made me very welcome when I first got there. I was a very, very young teenager. I think we were younger in those days, and they were all adults that I was working with, and so I did feel a bit strange when I first went there, because whereas in Booth there were a lot of girls, you know, they weren't there. They were happy days. They were very kind to me. They were appreciative of the work I did. I felt that the men in the factory treated me nicely, and it was good. Enjoyed it. I only left because I had a baby, and in those days, I was of the opinion that if you had a baby, you became a mum. That was your first priority.
Yeah. Mm. Can I just ask you about Grangetown as well? Mm-hmm. Well, there was an athletic club, was there?
No, it was an ARP hut. There was one in Ninian Park, by Ninian Park School, and there was one down on what they called the Mall, which was down Ferry Road.
Wasn't there something called the Grange Ladies?
Grange Ladies Gymnastic Club was what I was part of.
Yes.
That's what I belonged to.
Yes. So that's what I wanted to ask you about that. When did that start?
Well, that was the display that I saw in the park.
Right.
They were Grange Ladies. He also had ran a boys team as well. But they had more girls than boys. But the boys mostly did the football. But yeah, that was how I came to join, because I'd seen them in the park. Oh, this will be the school again. What do you think?